It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with May Brussel. For the past 14 years, May has been researching and uncovering facts and evidence from between the lines of the news and placing them in a more thorough perspective of how conspiracy, political assassination, and abuses of power affect us all. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California. And now, May Brussel.
Good evening. This is May Brussel in Carmel, California. It's Dialogue Conspiracy number 298, and it's December the 11th, 1977. Back on Dialogue Conspiracy in April of this year, April the 4th, 1977, I talked about George de Morenschild, a man whose name has been in the news ever since his death, his murder, but his name was quieted until the time he was murdered, except for among a very few researchers. I mentioned George de Morenschild because he was missing at that time. He'd been missing for 3 weeks. And I considered him, after many, many years of research into the Kennedy assassination, it's 14 years now, to be the most important witness that would unlock the real story of who killed President John Kennedy. After that show, 1 week later, George de Morenschild was murdered. He had been missing 3 weeks, and then he was murdered. A Dutch journalist by the name of Willem Altmans claimed that de Morenschild told him that Lee Harvey Oswald was a patsy, that the assassination involved oil people in Texas and people higher up, and that Lee Harvey Oswald would be cleared of being an accomplice in this murder of the President of the United States. Altman expected a reception by the House Select Committee investigating assassinations with this kind of information, but they tried to discredit him, and they gave him a cold shoulder. As a result, he went to national television. He was on the Good Morning America show, and he also gave the name of the prime witness that he had, George de Morenschild, for the connecting links of the assassination, who ordered the assassination. And he presented this to Gerald Ford. He had a meeting with Gerald Ford, and he wanted to give it to Jimmy Carter to tell how the assassination of President John Kennedy was planned. And his information had to do with Alan Dulles and the CIA and the people that Alan Dulles worked for. De Morenschild was, as I said, was dead a week after the original show that I did, April 4th, 1977. He was killed, and then afterwards, they continued the news media and the assassination committees in Washington, the Assassination Information Bureau, and the House Select Committee have played down the role of Willem Altmans and the story of George de Morenschild. Now, what Mr. Altman said on national TV and Good Morning America was that he had this secret witness who was willing to appear or should appear, and that witness's name was Donald Donaldson, that this person had been working for the government, for the Pentagon, and for high-up officials for many years, from the time of Franklin Roosevelt, that he was known through the various administrations. He had the alias of Dmitry Dimitrov, Jim Adams. He was acquainted with the CIA, and he was well acquainted with the people who planned John Kennedy's assassination. I learned just this last week on Friday from Ted Gandolfo in New York City that Donald Donaldson was found dead. He was murdered December the 7th, and it was in Switzerland. He had 17 bullet holes in his head. This is a shocking piece of information for the very serious researchers, because the connecting links of the Pentagon and the Defense Department to the murder of the President of the United States are being systematically wiped out in order to hold the line that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone or acted with a few Cubans. I think they'd settle for Castro or anti-Castro Cubans at this point. It's very murky, but the powers that be do not want this information out, and the primary witnesses are being murdered. Over a year ago, in September 1976, September 17th, I wrote what I called a position paper. It was a 13-page paper, and I had 100 copies made of these 13 pages to send to the House Select Committee and to newspaper people, primary sources of information around the country, and various researchers. And I listed what I considered 12 or 13 suggestions of the way an investigation should go into the various assassinations, specifically the John Kennedy and the Martin Luther King assassinations, because those are the ones that the House Select Committee has mandate to investigate. And I listed the errors, the primary errors of the original Warren Commission. But what I said in that position paper was that, number one, before any work begins by any committee or staff, as they assemble, the very first thing to do was to list all the witnesses who had been killed or missing since November 22, 1963. The reason being that once the inquiry would escalate, they would see the pattern of these murders, and the murders would follow. They would be necessary in order to cover up, as the committee in Washington was funded, say $1 million for the first year, maybe another million the second year, as the budget was being allocated and the attorney staff were being selected. It would be necessary to continuously kill the primary witnesses so that the committee there could say they find no evidence of a conspiracy, that James Earl Ray acted alone and Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. When the Senate, Senator Church's committee started to investigate the CIA back in 1976, there was an immediate rush of death of people directly related to the John Kennedy assassination and the assassination teams of the CIA. One was CIA Officer Sheffield Edwards. The other was CIA Officer William Harvey, Jimmy Hoffa, who had links to organized crime and the assassination teams that killed the two Kennedys and Reverend Martin Luther King. There was the murder of Sam Giancana, John Roselli, Charles Nicoletti, Carlos Prio Siqueiros, and George de Morenschild. Three of those happened just within 7 or 8 days apart. Then 2 weeks ago, we had the murder of William Sullivan of FBI counterintelligence, who had full knowledge of the Kennedy assassination and was the primary link of the Pentagon to the CIA and the FBI. That was William Sullivan. Just as at the time of Watergate, the exposures came with the Charles Houston plan to centralize the FBI and the CIA and the Pentagon, it already was working through all of these assassination plots, and William Sullivan was killed. Penn Jones, Jr., who specialized on keeping a list of all these deaths and turning us on to them from the very beginning, and has written 4 books on the death of witnesses, primary witnesses to the John Kennedy assassination, and Forgive My Grief, has a newsletter out now. It's called The Continuing Inquiry. And in his newsletter last issue, he listed 5 other FBI men who have died in the last 6 months that had something to do with the John Kennedy assassination. There were 6, counting William Sullivan, in the last 6 months that had a part of the investigation of the Kennedy assassination. One was Louis Nichols, 71, who was 71 years old, former number 3 investigator under J. Edgar Hoover, who died of June of 1977. Alan Belmont, 70 years old, of the Warren Commission. He was a witness before the Warren Commission and had a part in that cover-up for the FBI, who followed a few months later of August 77. James C. Cadogan, 60 years old, who was a document expert, who testified before the Warren Commission regarding the FBI and about Lee Harvey Oswald, died August 1977. Donald W. Kaler, FBI fingerprint section, a chemist, died in this 6 months time period. J.M. English, who headed the FBI Forensic Science Laboratory. He had retired in 1966. He was there in 1964 during the investigation of John Kennedy, and he is dead. And, of course, I have accumulated a lot of material for, hopefully for a book someday, on the murder of J. Edgar Hoover, who died May 1st, 1972, of allegedly a heart attack. The District of Columbia coroner, Dr. James L. Luke, said that after examining J. Edgar Hoover's body, the cause of death might have been a heart attack, but that an autopsy was not indicated. This was even though there was a lot of discussion about J. Edgar Hoover not being useful anymore, of blackmailing the White House, of having information on all the occupants, and he was going to be a real thorn in their side. And there was good reason to believe that the Pentagon at that time, with the Houston plan, wanted to take over the FBI. William Sullivan was instrumental in taking the files from Hoover's desk before he died, just shortly before, and putting a lot of them in John Ehrlichman's desk, the aide to Richard Nixon. And Clyde Tolson, J. Edgar Hoover's companion and housemate, was dead in 1975. It's funny that Tolson was not with J. Edgar Hoover the evening that he died, even though they were very close. So you have a rash of FBI murders. You have a connecting link of men from organized crime who worked with the FBI and the CIA on assassination teams, and now the death of this Mr. Donaldson. The death of Donaldson comes the same week that the FBI has released 40,000 pages of documents pertaining to the John Kennedy assassination. And I know a lot of you are expecting me to make comments on these documents, but it's too soon for me to make them. I am in touch with Ted Gandolfo in New York City, who is probably one of the finest researchers in the United States. He has a weekly TV cable show there now every weekend, and he's having one good witness after the other, authors and researchers on the assassination and writers on his program. He said that he will supply me with these documents. Of course, it's a monumental fee. The copying of them right now is 10 cents a page, which comes to $7,000 or $10,000, and the major news media has accessed the documents. It'll be a long time before the individual researchers get their hands on them. But I think it's important to know that as these pieces of information are being put out to the public, it's the same week that the information about the Pentagon's role, or the higher-up role of Alan Dulles, certainly with the military Pentagon, making major decisions with the Pentagon, that they are burning their bridges so nobody can connect them to the assassination. There is definitely a power struggle going on, of course, at the upper levels between the Pentagon and the CIA and the FBI. This didn't end with Watergate, and it didn't end with Richard Nixon. And all the agencies are being involved, the Secret Service, the Treasury Department, in these various exposés. But this last week, Jack Anderson had a column, a very innocent-looking column. You might have even passed the information at the bottom of them. It was about the effect of caffeine on the fetus, and that pregnant women should be careful about how much coffee they should take. Then at the very end of that column, this was November 1977, he makes the remark that the Pentagon has just destroyed their John Kennedy files. So that the Kennedy files that exist now in Texas and New Orleans still are not declassified by the FBI. The FBI keeps those. The ones that they've given out, the 40,000 pages of work that they did that is now available for the public, does not even touch probably upon the role of the Pentagon. These were carefully selected, and a lot of it was blocked out, and I'm sure that a lot was destroyed that they didn't want us to see. But the very week that the FBI was turning over their files of the John Kennedy assassination, the very week that Mr. Donaldson was murdered, is the week that the Pentagon has systematically burned or destroyed their John Kennedy files. And yet, no outrage by the press, no outrage by the news media. Jack Anderson simply slips it in his column, and knowing the role that Anderson has played with the assassination teams and cover-up artists all of his the times I've been following closely, the last 14 years, I wonder if he simply wrote that column so that he could send a message to the various people who are involved. You don't have to worry, the papers are burned. He certainly couldn't send it with messengers anymore, or with carrier pigeons, or however these agents send messages back and forth. And I've always linked Jack Anderson to the Defense Intelligence Agency. So just as a byline on a caffeine article, he puts the idea in for you to accept that the Pentagon has destroyed their files. Those files were important. They were important because Lee Harvey Oswald went to the Soviet Union as part of the Marines. He was in the Navy, and he had correspondence with John Connally. Even Marine Oswald was on national television just recently saying that Lee Harvey Oswald had written to John Connally, the Secretary of the Navy at one time, and later he was the governor of Texas, and said that when he came home from Europe, he wanted to work for John Connally, help him campaigning and do his work. That's interesting for an oppressed Marxist person who's gone to the Soviet Union and come home with his Russian wife, that she's saying his next occupation was to be, or wanted to be, for John Connally. Another researcher who's done work on George de Morenschild and the various areas of cover-up that are coming down now by the major media all across the board is Richard Sprague, not the investigator from Pennsylvania, the one that was supposed to head the committee in Washington, but the other Richard Sprague. This is Richard E. Sprague, who wrote many, many good articles for computer and automation, and now there's another issue. It's a magazine called People in the Pursuit of Truth. It's put out by the same group, but it's not part of a computer magazine anymore. Richard Eastbrake wrote an article for them dated November 15, 1977, that was just published. And in it, he wrote about George de Morenschild and Mr. Donaldson, and I thought I would read you some pages from this article, because if you don't get the Pursuit of Truth, you have no access to this information. But to show you how important these people were, this is from Richard Sprague's article. He said, Murder Incorporated of the Power Control Group has killed George de Morenschild at a time when he was too dangerous for him. The media branch of the Power Control Group, which he refers to as the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time, Newsweek, and he lists the powers that keep the information from the people, undertook a big campaign to discredit Willem Altman's and Mr. Altman's from the journalism station NOS-TV from Holland, because he was in possession of video and audio tapes of George de Morenschild. The de Morenschild murder so far has been concealed with the help of the media. They portrayed it as a suicide of a man who became insane. De Morenschild was quite sane at the time he disappeared from Belgium. Donald Donaldson, as I say, alias Dmitry Dimitrov, Jim Adams, was acquainted with the CIA and the people who planned JFK's assassination, and he was in contact with Willem Altman's. He showed up in Holland to tell his story to NOS-TV and to Willem Altman's. He told Altman's that Alan Dulles was the key CIA man in planning the assassination. Now, this is important. Richard Sprague says that Dulles planned it. But Dulles is the attorney and was the attorney, he's deceased now, of Nelson and David Rockefeller of Chase Manhattan Bank. Dulles always represented the large cartels that put Adolf Hitler into power and then went to form our CIA after World War II with his offices over in Switzerland. And he brought over Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's aide, chief of intelligence of Eastern Division, for a brief visit to the Pentagon and to Monterey, actually, and then back to Germany, where he was put in a villa, and he's still alive. Alan Dulles may have made the planning stages, but he also couldn't have the idea. The large corporations, of course, had to be behind the Kennedy assassination. Sprague said Donaldson had been brought to the United States as a double agent during World War II by Franklin Roosevelt. He held back his knowledge of the assassination conspiracy until the Church Committee was formed. He took his information to Senator Church, who brought him to President Ford, rather than have him questioned by the Church or Schweiker Committee or subcommittees. Gerald Ford, Frank Church, and Donaldson had a meeting in which Gerald Ford talked both of them into keeping Donaldson's information under wraps. Now, this was written in November of 1977 by Richard Sprague, and Donaldson was murdered December the 7th, 1977. So Gerald Ford, member of the Warren Commission, who's always worked with Navy intelligence, again, the links of the military to the assassinations, who is on the Warren Commission, who served the CIA all of his years in Congress and as president, sat with Frank Church, who also wanted to run for president of the United States. But Mr. Sprague says that this meeting took place in which Gerald Ford talked them out of giving the information. They talked Mr. Donaldson out of giving this information, and then Donaldson is murdered, and the information is buried with him with just a few pieces left. De Morenschild is dead, and Donaldson is dead. Richard Sprague wrote that when George de Morenschild was killed, then Mr. Donaldson decided that it was time to make his information public, and he offered it to the Select Committee in Washington, D.C. He approached Willem Altman's and asking that he keep his identity secret. He told his story. He stayed in Holland at the time that Mr. Altman's tried to reach President Carter. Altman revealed Donaldson's identity on American TV because he thought, I suppose, that it would ensure his life or protect him. And he told it to the House Select Committee, run by the biggest crook and cover-up artist since Gerald Warren's commission, Mr. Robert Blakey. He took it to the Select Committee, and Jimmy Carter refused to listen to the story. Gerald Ford, as president, heard it and told Mr. Donaldson to put the wraps on it. Jimmy Carter refused to hear the story from Mr. Donaldson. Donaldson moved to England And while he was there, he disappeared from a London hotel. Now, Richard Sprague wrote this a month ago, and it just came out. He said he left large unpaid bills at the London and Amsterdam hotels where he was staying, and the possibility is very good he has gone the same route as de Morenschild, murdered by the power control group. And Richard Sprague is absolutely right. He was murdered by the power control group. He went on to say, the episode is reminiscent of the de Morenschild affair. I could add to that it's reminiscent of a long series of murders and assassinations, but this is really getting very, very flagrant and scary to think how many witnesses are killed. Richard Sprague wrote a list of ways the media is covering up the murder of the President of the United States. This is the year 1977, where we have literally hundreds of researchers doing work on the assassinations, and the major media is trying desperately to hold the line. And he cites examples of the barrage of information, and I'm going to share it with you because some of it is very much like the individual programs that we have here on Dialogue Conspiracy. But Richard Sprague has been doing this monumental work since 1970 with his first article in Computer and Automation. And I'll list some of the ways, the components that he says of the 1977 campaign to cover up the investigation of the president's murder. He says there was a book by Bud Fensterwald, who he goes on in his article, if we have time to go into, as being a CIA agent. He's worked for the power control group all of his years in Washington, at least since the Kennedy assassination. And he cites the example of Fensterwald writing a book, which has been on the newsstands, and I see it, Safeway supermarkets, bookstores, Bernard Fensterwald's book on the assassination. And Richard Sprague accuses him of leaving out the CIA agents, the key people, all the key people in his book were left out of Fensterwald's book. He said at least 12 people of the CIA were left out. He said it was a clever effort on the part of one of the CIA's best agents to throw people off the track by leaving out at least 12 CIA conspirators and hangers-on that he has files of in his own committee to investigate assassinations that he formed in 1968. These are Richard Case Nagel, William Seymour, Emilio Santana, Manuel Gonzalez, Guy Gabaldon, Mary Hope, Richard Nagel twice, Harry Dean, Ronald, August Inovich, Thomas Beckham, Fred Lee Christman, Frenchy, and Jack Lawrence. He cites the TV special, the ABC TV special on Lee Harvey Oswald as a cover-up, the new movie coming out soon by CBS on Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald, a book by Patricia McMillan, who's from the CIA, and he gives examples and information and facts that she's of the CIA, and she worked with Marina Oswald and wrote the book Marina and Lee. There's been a series of TV appearances, Tom Schneider, Dick Cavett. All major shows are having Marina Oswald and Priscilla Johnson on as guests, and nobody is allowed to confront them. The condition of their being on the air is nobody confronts them. Then there was the murder of de Morenschild, the discrediting of William Altman's, and he mentions the possible murder of General Donald Donaldson, which became a fact just this week, and then an attack by the Select Committee on various researchers, and they're selecting a specific group, such as Carl Oglesby, I know, and the Assassination Information Bureau now, to be the spokesman for all the researchers, even though they don't have the facts and they cover up as much as Bernard Fensterwald does. They have inherited the cloak of the cover-up back in Washington, D.C. Mark Lane has moved to California and flies back and forth and has literally abandoned his office there at the height of the action. The committee is run by people from the Justice Department, the CIA, and the FBI. The major witnesses are being killed, and the media projects this cover-up. He didn't include Michael Eddowes, the author of the Oswald file, who wrote a terrible book, and it was distributed all over the country to bookstores. I understand some stores didn't even have a choice. It was given to them to sell in large hunks. And this book is another massive cover-up by a man who has to work with the Pentagon intelligence agencies, who cannot stand up under questioning or interrogation. He was a guest on Ted Gandolfo's show in New York, and Ted really clobbered him with questions. I'm surprised he even showed up. Richard Sprague talked about Lawrence Schiller, who is a member of the power control group, who made that movie, The Trial of Lee Harvey Oswald, for ABC TV. I've talked about Shiller as being the man that was with Jack Ruby when he died, representing, again, the Pentagon, to get a tape recording of Jack Ruby in the hospital, saying there was no conspiracy, where he was fully doped. It was Lawrence Shiller who worked with Gary Gilmore and held a mic to his mouth while he was being electrocuted. They actually took movies of the death. TV movies were made, and they want to make a movie of the death of Gary Gilmore in Utah. This is what Sprague says. He says, Shiller is despicable. In addition to being a con artist, a crook, and a liar. How, the reader may ask, can a guy like that become co-producer of a major ABC television show? The answer is simple. He's available to the power control group for attacking the assassination researchers, for ridiculing them, and reinforcing that no conspiracy idea. It goes into the reproduction of that movie, The Trial of Lee Harvey Oswald, in Texas, and the way the media played it up. Mr. Sprague lashes into NBC and CBS are planning major TV specials on the assassination. He believes, Richard Sprague does, and I do, and so does Ted Gandolfo, that the media attack, the ABC show, the CBS, the Marina Oswald story, the Michael Edo story, are all because the House Select Committee is working there, and they're going to have a complete cover-up of the truth of the assassination, but it will be supported by the media barrage, always supporting that lone assassin theory. Another factor of releasing these 40,000 pages of the FBI reports right now is that the headlines continue to say Lee Harvey Oswald killed John Kennedy. There's an example in our local paper here. It says J. Edgar Hoover tagged Oswald as JFK killer 2 hours after the slaying, the files reveal. Now, that doesn't mean Lee Harvey Oswald killed the president, but each generation grows up seeing this over and over in the headlines that Lee Harvey Oswald was the killer. Whether J. Edgar Hoover discovered it 6 months later or 4 months later or 2 hours later isn't the point. It's always Oswald the killer. And then the Associated Press says, just 2 hours after Kennedy was killed, FBI Director Hoover concluded that Oswald was the assassin, that Oswald was a mean-minded individual in the category of a nut. This was what the declassified letters said, that he called the Attorney General right away within 2 hours and said, I think I know who killed the president in Dallas. Now, Lee Harvey Oswald may be mean-minded. That may be true. I don't know him as a person. I don't think he was a nut. But within 2 hours after the assassination of John Kennedy, J. Edgar Hoover would really have no way of knowing what Lee Harvey Oswald was doing in the Soviet Union, in Minsk, in Moscow. He was with CIA agent Priscilla Johnson there, CIA agent Arlene Mosby, the two journalists from the CIA. He was with John McVicker of the CIA at the embassy. He was with Robert Snyder of the CIA at the American Embassy in Moscow. His contacts were with people from the Pentagon and the CIA. How would J. Edgar Hoover know that Lee Harvey Oswald worked it alone? Oswald had no accumulated bank accounts and no money, and he had gotten himself to Helsinki and then to the Soviet Union on planes that had no time schedule, that had to be private planes or military that flew him in. He gave his passport up at the embassy and then said, I want to come back home, even though he gave them radar stories about our Marine activity in the Pacific. The State Department sent him money to come home. It was supposed to be a loan, but I saw no record of when or where he paid it back. How would J. Edgar Hoover know all this? Because he worked with William Sullivan, who was just murdered. And if William Sullivan were alive, he could testify before the committee in Washington, D.C. But that could never happen. If George de Morenschild were alive, he could testify. But that's not going to be allowed to be happen. And if Mr. Donaldson were alive, he could testify, and that won't happen. So even though the witnesses died in just dribbles before, say in the last 14 years, they were dying, maybe 100 of them divided by 14 years. But now one a week is being killed. And as I say, six major FBI people that had something to do with the case have died in the last 6 months. It's going to make it a lot harder to get the truth. And of course, I'm depressed about it. But next year, we'll find more answers. The year will be starting in a couple of weeks. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. I'm sorry to leave you on such a sour note, but it isn't very good news as far as the research goes. I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy. Keep well and have fun getting those Christmas presents and doing the shopping, and have a good year.
You've been listening to Dialogue Conspiracy with Mae Russell.